Welcome to the Bloody Broads Pod. We're your Bloody Broads. I'm Bhavna Sharma.
And I'm Jamie Howard. We are your horror guides from page to screen and everything in between. And this week, we have a very special guest back on for her second appearance on the pod.
Third.
Oh, it is third. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Math is hard. Well, we're going to let her introduce herself.
I've written a letter to Daddy. His address is heaven above.
Perfect. It's me. No notes.
It's me, your favorite graphic designer.
Yeah, the Ink Witch.
Hi, it's Jamie. Two. Jamie Two.
And this week we are discussing the classic Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. So this is one of my favorite movies, but it is Jamie's favorite movie.
It is my favorite movie.
Yeah, so when she wanted to come on and talk about it, obviously we were thrilled. This movie means a lot to me in terms of, you know, they call it the old hag movies, where the scariest thing a woman can be is old.
Hagsploitation.
Hagsploitation, yes. So anyways, I was super thrilled you wanted to come on, Jamie. So right off the bat, why don't you just give us your first thoughts and why you wanted to cover this film and why it means so much to you?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. Basically, long story short, my mom would always make the reference, "But yeah, Blanche."
I love it but so yeah. much.
So like, she would constantly use, and I'd be like, "Who's Blanche? Why is this a thing?" And then she was like, "Oh, it's from one of my favorite movies." And I don't know why I always give her this voice, because Bhav knows that she sounds nothing like this.
You mean your mom is not like an old-timey mid-Atlantic woman? Because now I'm disappointed when I meet her. She doesn't sound like that.
It's for some reason in my head, I always give her this voice like, "I can't believe you. Oh, my God." Like, she sounds nothing like that.
She's not a Long Islander.
No, she's not. She's far from it. It was my grandmother who had the accent until she got dementia. And then all of a sudden turned Queens. I don't know where that came from. But so my mom would make these references. And basically, long story short, it ended up like she said, "Oh, it's from one of my favorite movies." And then I was like, "Okay, well, now I got to know." Since you quoted at me like 500 times per day, you know, now I got to see what this is all about. And, you know, growing up with one TV, no DVD player, nothing, like I didn't get to like actually like experience it until I was like probably in my teens when she finally found it on like turnerclassicmovies.com and like ordered the DVD for like crazy money. And
I remember those infomercials very well.
Like, you know, order now on Turner Classic Movies. And then what was his name?
Oh, if this was trivia, I would have gotten this question right. But because we're like in pod mode, I cannot pull that one out of air.
Rob?
It's Robert something.
Oh, whatever. Yeah. Osborne. Robert Osborne.
Yes.
So, you know, and so we sat down one night. We watched it like start to finish. Because the other thing is my mom loves Betty Davis and anything Betty Davis. So I grew up on, you know, Now Voyager and all that stuff. And I was, you know, All About Eve is my other favorite movie. I always want to be named Margot, but I'm stuck with Jamie, but that's fine. I mean, it's not a bad name.
What are you trying to say, Blanche?
Yeah, right? But yeah, no, Blanche. Yeah, Jamie.
I get it. Listen. All About Eve is so iconic, and Betty Davis is so iconic, and you and I could probably do a side episode of, like, Betty Davis, because she means a lot to me as well. Like, yeah. what a broad.
Anyways, what a broad. I mean, I could go on a rant.
But how does someone so talented birth somebody so untalented?
My God, poor BD.
We'll dive into that.
Well, we're not, you know what? You know what? Not poor BD. No. Not poor BD. Isn't she like, she's probably going to listen to this out of spite and be like, I hate you.
I know, I forget that some of these people are still alive, but I love that your mom was like, all right, I'm going to order Jamie this DVD of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. And do you remember the first time you watched it, like what your initial reaction was? Because, I mean, I know what mine was, so I'm very interested in yours.
My initial reaction, I mean, because I already was, you know, of that nature of I love like spoopy, like culty type stuff. So when I first saw it, I remember we watched it and I was just like awestruck by like this movie just because it was so like, it wasn't scary. It wasn't like one of those things, like, because I was old enough to know that it wasn't scary. It was just more psychologically like, what is going on? So I remember watching it the first time and being kind of like shocked by it and just being like, and the use of like lighting and the set work and just the costumes in general and Joan Crawford's terrible acting.
We can talk about whether we're team Joan or team Betty as we get into it, but I don't think this was her worst movie by a long shot.
No, which is the funny part.
I know, but I agree with you. This is not her best. But anyways.
But no, I remember being just like, oh my gosh. And I loved like baby Jane Hudson's character as well. And not just because of Betty Davis, but because of like the getup.
No, her face is truly horrifying. I was so glad you wanted to talk about the makeup because as anyone who's seen Feud by Ryan Murphy knows, I feel like that show was made for you and I. I love that it was an intentional choice by Betty Davis to make herself quote unquote ugly because Joan Crawford was all about like Joan Crawford used to tape her face back like Kardashian style.
Yeah.
Like if the best part. Joan was still alive today, I just feel like her and Kim would get along fabulously.
Could you imagine how far she would have to tape her face though?
Right? Like her skin would be falling off her face.
And here's but how to avoid CPS coming after your children.
Right. Well, and of course, she was a very complicated woman. But it's always very interesting to me that the use of beauty as a signifier of goodness is always really fascinating to me because there's been so many sociological studies done of, you know, people will be in a criminal lineup and someone will literally match the description of the criminal to a T, but because they are perceived as attractive, they're like, oh, the person's like, oh, no, it can't be them. And I'm just like, but.
I'd be so screwed.
Oh, no. But it is, Blanche, but it is. And of course, there's the whole disability angle in this film, but we can get into that. But Bhavna, I did want to hear your first thoughts before I go down my rabbit hole of feelings.
That's fair. No, the first time I watched this movie, I was, I want to say like 16, 17 years old. And I was on like a classic movies kick because I'd always been into classic movies and all that kind of stuff. But like, I wasn't too aware of classic horror films or like things that were like thriller and all that kind of stuff. Like up until that point, it basically had been like musicals and other like big production films. So I was like, you know what? Let me look into more horror stuff because I was in my like, I'm pretentious. I'm a pretentious film teen and I need to build my repertoire. So...
plebes.
But I ended up borrowing it from the library of all places, which I was surprised they had it at the library. And I knew nothing about the Feud at the time. So I just thought like, wow, look at these two really pretending to hate each other.
Right.
You know? And like, I knew nothing about Joan Crawford's, like the only thing I knew going into that movie was that Joan Crawford was a piece of shit mother. That's all I knew going into watching that movie.
Wire hangers.
We will eventually also cover that, but maybe for Mother's Day.
Because what was messed up is that I had seen
Yeah.
What was messed up is that I'd seen Mommy Dearest, but I hadn't seen this.
Mm. Oh, same. Yeah.
So I had seen like the Faye Dunaway Mommy Dearest and I hadn't seen this. Yeah. And I remember being like, damn, this is 1962. The fuck? Like, this is actually really good. And considering like what kind of other films were coming out around that time too, I was like, this is unique. Like,
yeah,
this is like, wow. And like, I had to kind of remind myself that like, cause you know, we're so used to like women not really having a prolonged expiration date compared to those days. We still have an expiration date, but it's a little more prolonged than it was then. And finding out like how old they were and everything. And I'm like, that was considered old? What the fuck?
Literally yeah. like mid to late 40s, both of them. And then early-ish 50s by the end of everything. But I'm like, y'all. Meanwhile, yeah. Jane Fonda is in her 70s and or almost 80s. Very successful.
Good God, it's Jane Fonda.
We do love Barbarella in this house. Yes. But yes, anyways, yeah. Bhavna, so you finally see the movie by renting it from the library, which I love. And
yes, and I loved it. I thought it was great. I loved the camera work. And I thought their use of lighting, too, was really like what made it for me. Because I watched mm-hmm. in the dark and blah, blah, blah. I had the whole ambience thing going on. But I was just blown away. Because, like, I wasn't expecting to, because, you know, there's always that, like, cheesy factor of watching something from, like, decades ago, but it didn't really kick in for me at all with this, so.
Well, and I think that's totally fair, because the first 30 minutes of this are pure camp. Like, from
yeah.
baby Jane yeah, yeah, yeah. as a child to the reveal that, mm-hmm. you know, Betty Davis is now playing adult Jane Hudson and living with her sister and, you know, taking care of her sister that she thinks that she is crippled. I mean, the car crash itself is very camp. The doll underneath the car, you know, it was shot very, I don't want to say extravagant, but maybe over the top.
Yeah.
But I'm the same as you both. I didn't see it. I think I was about 16 or 17. And as I've said many times on many different podcasts, I had horrific insomnia as a child into my teen years. And so I would stay up and watch movies, usually on Turner Classic Movies or when Tumblr had these amazing people who would post things to Put Locker.
Yes, Put Locker.
Oh
yes.
My God.
Flashbacks, all three of us. But
oh my God.
Yeah, so I was like, you know, everybody hyped up this movie to me and I had just watched Night of the Living Dead for the first time. And I was just on a kick of classic, air quotes, horror because I, again, kind of same as you, Jamie, had always been into the spooky, the mystical, the frightening. But this was the first time watching a horror movie where I went from being jump scare frightened to dread. I mean, just the gut punch of thinking, oh, she has to take care of her sister out of spite for the rest of her life and out of a sense of, you know, just not entitlement. What's the word I'm looking for? I feel very strongly about this movie. So this is probably going to happen a couple times in this episode out of, you know, necessity. She feels responsible for
yeah.
the accident all the way through the film to the terror of, oh my God, like Blanche is stuck upstairs in this chair mm-hmm. and her sister has ripped the phone out of the wall.
Yeah.
And
oh my God, can we just...
rats.
Can yeah. we just the her just pressing that call button though?
Genius!
Oh my God!
Oscar!
I would have like oh my God!
That would have driven me crazy by itself.
Oh my
Absolutely.
God!
Absolutely.
I just want to know who's downstairs. That's all I
yeah,
want to know.
That's okay, oh. And we can get into. We're definitely gonna get right into the use of perceived innocence as a weapon. Because mm-hmm. Blanche is 100% the villain here. 100%. And people are like, oh my God, what do you mean? They're always shook. But the gut punch of the last scene on the beach, holy shit. I mean.
But that's the best part about it. Because you start when you first watch a movie, you have no idea what's going to happen. So you're thinking like, Jane, 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 Jane. And then it's like, oh, oh.
Oh, absolutely. Oh. I mean, of course, Baby Jane grows up a very spoiled child, she's literally a vaudeville star. But we see it in the first scene in the film, you know, when she's demanding to get ice cream, she says only if Blanche can get some too. So it's not like she was ever excluding her sister, you know. And then on the flip side of that, when Blanche becomes the bigger movie star, you know, she uses her contract to say, well, when I make a movie, then Jane has to get a movie. And then, of course, what winds up happening is she gets all the great scripts. And the only thing left for Jane is these, like, B-movie scraps, which, you know, I watched an interview with Bette Davis last night. She actually went on Johnny Carson, like, right before she passed away. And she's talking about how... I know. I love that interview so much. Where she's talking about, like, you know, I do think that the system of having a contract to a very specific studio did help younger actors develop their craft. But at the same time, she didn't get to work with, like, Marlon Brando, like all these incredible, she lists off a bunch of stars that people were shocked she never worked with. But there's so much of this film that imitates real life that once you know the story behind it, it gets even more difficult to watch in a good way where you're like, no, like I don't want any of this to happen to either one of them. And I just think it's the perfect, in a way, follow-up to our last episode. Well, I say last episode, technically two episodes ago, I guess, of Nope, talking about like how you can feel used as a performer. I know I'm getting into heavy territory from my artist side, so I appreciate you indulging me. But yeah, I just, the reveal on the beach is everything. And I have a lot of feelings, you guys.
Oh my gosh. And then I just thought about, I don't know if you've seen it, but one of Bette Davis's last films. And it was like one of those things that you just found on YouTube. And like, she's so like old and frail. And I, Jamie, you might know what one I'm talking about. It's like the Whale House. What was it?
It's something along those lines, but she's at the twilight of her life. Like she's very skinny and she's always a small person, but I mean, just, she's lost all of her glow, her voluptuousness of personality.
But she was still so like,
oh, she's incredible.
She would sit in an interview and just tell you where to put it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that interview that you and I were talking about earlier with Johnny Carson, she's on it to promote this jazz album that she had created. Mm-hmm. And she calls out EMI Records. She's like, they didn't promote this at all because I'm an old woman. And she's like, I'm going to show up at Tower Records in Hollywood tomorrow at 4 p.m. Be there or be square. Which, of course, you know, in the 70s was like a TV was still kind of at its height and everyone was tuned in. So that's how they found out about it. But I just, for me, what makes this whole thing horror, because there are people who argue that this is not horror and I strongly disagree.
They can leave that in a 5-star review.
Correct. I mean, and I want y'all's opinion on this as well, because it's definitely something I was excited to discuss. For me, what makes this horror is, yes, the inevitable, you know, she can't escape, the idea of being trapped, the idea of relying on someone that you know you have fucked over, and this is karma coming to get your ass. I mean, to me, this is the ultimate sort of Harlequin drama as opposed to a Harlequin romance, and I have a hard time coalescing my thoughts on it, clearly, but I don't know. What do you say to people who say that it's not horror?
No. Yeah. I think it's realistic horror in a weird way, which is why it's scary.
Yes.
Which is why the scariest films are the ones that like relate to real life. Cause real life is, is scary.
It's like what I said on the pod a million times is that the scariest episode of Supernatural to me is the one where it wasn't ghosts or demons and it was literally the kids living in the wall.
Listen, like, if I found a child the in my wall, one. All I can think about is that TikTok. What's scarier than
a child?
A child. The Gen Z who hear this and don't know what Vine we're referencing are going to hang me. But yeah,
I'm a grown up.
I'm the adult. Yeah, I have a car payment and mortgage. You know, it's just
I don't.
It's well, it's really interesting to me how if this was released today, the discussion around ableism and quote unquote cripping up would be huge. Mm-hmm. And I think we can all agree mm-hmm. on that. You know, mm-hmm. famously, Joan Crawford was a stunning woman, you know, minus her personality, who is not disabled in any capacity and spends the mm-hmm. entirety of the film, except for that incredible, intense scene where she drags herself down the stairs in a wheelchair. And I don't want to speak from a place of authority on this because I am not physically disabled, yeah. you know, in the way of being, you know, disabled from the waist down, but I don't know. Like, how do you guys feel watching this in 2022 versus
yeah.
when we saw it when we were 15 and 16 and we're blown away by the acting?
That's a good one. I mean, I think that's kind of the interesting part too, is just I wish I could see it for the first time now.
Right.
Because yes. I can't, because I've seen it so many times that it doesn't, I can't put my finger on what or what not I would initially feel. You know what I'm saying?
No, 100%. Because the shock of the admission at the end of the film mm-hmm. that Jane wasn't driving that night and that Blanche crashed mm-hmm. into the gate is yeah. you will never relive that level of shock again unless you share it with someone else, which I think is why we get people to watch
How
these movies.
How hard did she drive into that gate?
That's what I'm saying. Not
I'm
that
sorry. Snapped her spine?
Like, right. Not the like, cars were like built super – I mean, they were steel instead of plastic, what we have today. But I just can't imagine how fast she would have had been going. You know, like –
I could see her maybe fucking up her feet with given those heels she was wearing, but but her spine, come on.
Her open toe, golden right. shoes.
Alternate but ending. Surprise. I wasn't disabled this entire time.
Oh my God. If she had gotten up out of the chair, oh that no. would have been the gag. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's not that just that Blanche is actually the one that caused the accident. It's the one. You know, for me, it's the fact that Blanche literally tries to murder Jane, but Jane yeah. is seen as the one that's a bully. I mean,
yeah.
Why did it even bother her that her sister was, quote unquote, you know, mocking her because she was drunk? Like, that is the equivalent of if I were out at a bar with Bhavna and someone making fun of, like, Bhavna, like, imitating my voice, which is extremely easy to make fun of because I sound 12.
No.
Like, it would be like Bhavna making fun of my voice and then like me pushing her in front of a MARTA bus here in Atlanta. You know, like, who even cares that much about being made fun of? And I just think it speaks to sort of the vanity, the deep well of insecurity that Blanche had.
Is this premeditated, Jamie?
No.
And I mean, you wouldn't be going out there, you know, in the streets going like, hey, I got something to say. Hey. I just right. killed a Bhavna today.
I would never. But yeah, I think sort of the
– Oops.
Oops. Mean girls her. I think one of the things that kind of comes up in other films relating to mental health and horror for me is this idea of being driven to insanity by someone who's playing innocent. And it's typical gaslighting, right? Like, it's literally, there's a movie called Gaslighting.
Yeah.
I feel strongly about that one.
Go ahead, Jamie. Take it home.
Oh, really? I take it home? No.
No.
No, it's that's like that. Honestly, that's it. It's that factor of that, like, that gaslighty, like, you know, it's the innocence factor because I've had so many bullies in my life. That it's like one of those situations where you're like, oh, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, like, you know, it's that factor of you're playing this persona that everybody deems is acceptable, and then behind the closed door, you know what's going on.
Yeah.
So it's like,
absolutely. Mm. Yeah.
And it's a trope that lives on, even like, I mean, it's so real that it's a trope that lives on to this day.
Yeah.
Like, it was just a plot line in the latest Stranger Things season.
Exactly.
Oh my God. Yeah. Wow. I did not.
Eleven's bully. The one that's like, I don't know what I just want to get the assignment right, miss. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not bullying her.
Those people are always the worst too, because I have someone, and I'm going to try to keep this as vague as possible. I have someone that I have to interact with on a semi-daily basis, maybe semi-weekly basis, and they play what I call corporate nice, where they say that they're curious about things, and they've ruined the word curious for me. Like, I never want to hear that again. But you guys,
curious,
you both,
and curiouser.
Right. Like, you both know what I mean, that it's veiled in this nicety, this politeness that just makes it so much worse. Like, I'd rather you just be an asshole to me than try to defend yourself and shield yourself in this nicety. And you know what it reminded me of? Because I just rewatched this for Lord knows how many times. I recently rewatched The Babadook, which is famously one of my favorite films that I've talked on several podcasts about. But it's that same feeling of being trapped, and it's that same dread that I think other films try to replicate and just can't. Mm-hmm. Also, was this the first – I know it wasn't the first, but this is probably one of the first mainstream films to only use – what, three locations?
Yep, something like that.
Yeah,
the house, the
maybe
post office.
Psycho was the other one.
Psycho was up there. Psycho was two, three locations: the car lot, the hotel, and where she
the
stops.
Motel, I think.
Yeah,
yeah, the other motel, not Bates.
No, yeah,
yeah.
But I think that, you know, that lens, it's that just adds to the claustrophobia of this movie, you know?
Yeah.
It was very tight with the locations, which also made you feel the insanity of those two being cooped up together.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Also, the horror of relying on another human being for all of your needs for the most part. That was one of my biggest fears. And I know it's very ableist of me to, you know, be like, oh my God, the worst thing that could ever happen would have to be caretaken by other people. It's not the worst thing that could ever happen, but.
But I don't think it's stemming from the fact that, it's not stemming from the fact that, like, oh my God, is somebody else taking, it's the fact that, oh my God, somebody else is taking care of me.
Yes.
It's the factor of, like, I can't do anything for myself. All my independence is gone. This is, yeah. It's not, I completely understand where you're coming from with that.
I can't even control my household staff. I can't control my own finances. Or the only control she had was the finances, and little does she know.
Oh my God. Oh my God. The reveal of the ledger is such a good detail that no one ever talks about. Like, flashing her, you know, checkbook that she finds, whatever the 50s equivalent of a checkbook is, when she's so hungry that she waits until until baby Jane leaves and she yanks open that drawer and it's just like devouring the chocolates. Like,
yeah,
we've all been there. First of all, we've all been like,
that was me last night.
But when she sees that the picture of her is marked out, that doesn't even faze her, by the way. She just keeps going at the chocolates. But then she sees the ledger of the checkbook or the bank balance and is like, oh, my sister has truly spent almost my last dime. Can you imagine? Like,
no.
What a fucking thing. I literally got chills thinking about it.
I kind of wish she would have discovered her using her voice.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like, I know that was Joan Crawford just voiceover, right?
I think
we know that
it is. I believe it is.
I've never looked it up because I've always just assumed.
Yeah, I assumed it was her voiceover just because of the way she was speaking.
Because Betty also has a weird like cadence to her voice. Even if she tried to cover, I don't think she could cover it.
No, it's she very famously would always say, well, I'm a Yankee, so it's just her cadence of talking. Like, she would preference all of her personality traits with, I'm a Yankee, so.
Although, I mean, there are times where I go, all right, bye-bye.
Yeah, when she is imitating Blanche's voice, I think that just sends a chill down my spine, because then we also get the doppelganger, you know, which is also horrifying. I mean, my God, the horror tropes that this movie spun, and it didn't establish them in the genre necessarily, but it absolutely popularized them.
Oh, for sure.
And you know what's actually, this thought just came into my head before I forget it, and it goes off into the ether like most of my thoughts do.
Feel free.
The thought of when Betty or Jane is sitting there with the pianist.
Yes.
I said pianist. And she's sitting there and she's talking about it, and you see the light in her eyes again. And she's like so happy and so excited. And it's like so heartbreaking once you watch it and you knew the ending.
It really is. It is.
Because then it's that like,
It's devastating, right? Because she really is so deep into her psychosis. All she wants to do is perform. And she has been performing her entire life. And now she is dressed up as her younger child self, the character that she created on stage, and going about her daily life, and no one recognizes her because she's an old hat.
That was the other thing that I forgot to mention that you just brought up, was the fact that when she's like, oh, I'm not even going to tell you. That would be unfair. You just have to guess. Guess who I am. And it's like,
When her and Edwin first meet is one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie. Before we get into that, though, Bhavna, how do we feel about taking a commercial break?
I think that'd be a great idea. And everyone should stay tuned for some more free thoughts.
And we're back. And Jamie S. and I were both musing about how she is so excited to see Edwin, because I think she thinks he truly sees her, when in reality he's using her for money, obviously.
Yeah. Which is so heartbreaking. So heartbreaking.
Deeply. But Jamie, you said something that really just kind of tugged at my heartstrings too, when we were discussing this before, where the light comes back in her eyes. Like, she just wants to be seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that she's sitting there and she is talking about it and she's excited about it and she's actually, and I want to do it exactly as I used to. And like, she would go into this, like, this monologue bit where her eyes were, and she was animated, and it was like one of the first times you see her being genuinely so sweet. And in throughout the whole movie, and it always breaks my heart, because also to flip over to his face where he's just like, oh God, I can't. Oh, yeah, really? Oh. You are the baby Jane Hudson. Like, oh,
he like
okay.
couldn't care less. Yeah. He's playing like a fiddle to get this money.
Yeah. And it kills me.
What makes it even worse is that, like, it's her face later after they do their, like, little faux rehearsal. And then he's just like, all right, well, how much are you going to pay me? And she's just like, money? Like, what do you mean? And then it clicks in her head that she has to, like, pay to keep him around.
Yeah.
Like, just, I was like, oh, no. Baby girl,
I'll be your friend.
Don't do it. Don't buy friendships.
I'll be your friend.
Yeah, it's devastating that, like, you know, Jane just adores Blanche, right? And so there's this whole trauma of thinking that she could harm her sister so deeply, and like, that's what sets off that insanity in Jane. And then just to make it worse, you know, Blanche makes her take care of her for years. Blanche can clearly afford someone to take care of her. Elvira comes to take care of her, which I love that that's her
name. I love Elvira.
Yeah. Love her. Top 10, you know, movie characters of all time.
10 out of 10. Love the 10 name.
Out of 10. I thought you left your key at home. I didn't.
Yeah, she's so sneaky. I love it. She's so crafty. Yeah. But there's this thing that happens, and I think now we've got some better studies on it blatantly in the 60 plus years since this movie came out, where we understand a little bit more regression, where what level of psychosis would cause someone to regress so far back that they never leave the age of, you know, 6 to 8.
Yeah.
I mean, and that doesn't even touch the surface of being a woman in today's society, where we're constantly infantilized and we're told to be hairless and a high-pitched voice. And, you know, there was a TikTok trend going around a couple months ago now where the waitress, bless her heart, very early 20s, was like, oh, when I wear my hair in pigtails, I get better tips. And everyone else who's older is like, yeah, duh, because you look like a little girl. Like, it's this idea of that the only way Jane could find value was as a little girl. Like, that broke me. That just... I mean, you're constantly needing to revert back to your childhood self because that's the last time you were successful. But at the same time, you're having to take care of your sister out of a sense of, you know, obligation, because you think you're the one that caused her to be disabled and in a wheelchair. Are you shitting me? Of course she's going to go crazy.
I love that side note that, Jamie, you're going on these rants, because I feel like you've got it. You just take it away, Jamie. Take it away.
No, I don't want to be the only person talking.
No, because it's you're like, and this, and this, and I'm like, oh, there's my, oh, there it goes. Oh, there's my point too. Oh,
please,
you got it.
Hop in. Please hop in, because obviously this movie
just, I know, I love it,
to the three of us. And I think not enough women have seen this movie. Not enough women in the industry have seen this movie.
Yeah.
And I think if more women – this is my hot take for the episode. If more women in 2022 watch this movie, this would light a fire under so many asses. And everyone's like, it's just a horror film. How can you say that? And I'm like, you don't get it until you see it and get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know that trope you love? It's from this.
It's literally
from this.
Yeah.
Like, you know that masterclass in acting you're looking for? It's in this.
Oh, wait. Can we talk about, though, the difference in acting styles between Bette Davis and Joan Crawford? Oh, everybody just nodded at once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody's just, I mean, so Joan Crawford was known for this very reserved, naturalistic
style. That's the podcast, everyone.
Joan Crawford was known for this very reserved, you know, naturalistic style that made the characters real. Meanwhile, Bette Davis is like clinging to the stage acting that she grew up with for her dear life, because she started off famously the first 5 years.
She was a flapper, right?
Yeah. Well, she would definitely have an issue with that term because of the sexual connotations, but she also didn't give a shit. So, you know, who's to say? She was the original hot girl, her and Mae West.
Oh my God, Mae West.
We'll talk about Mae West another time. I wish she was in a horror, but
I'm putting these people on my altar as we speak.
But it comes across in the fact that they both were cast in the characters they were cast in as well, because there's no way Joan Crawford could have played Baby Jane. I think Bette Davis could have played Blanche? Absolutely.
Hot take, guys. Hot take. Not so hot.
100%.
Yeah.
All I can think of is, you're going to look at me and you're going to tell me I'm wrong. Grow up, Doug. Like, I just, clearly we're both Bette Davis stands. And then, you know, Bob is just, like, it was just like, what is going on? Well,
like, it was just the way podcast, like,
yes. Yes. 100%. Yes.
I honestly had no opinions on Joan Crawford's acting or career or anything like that. But just the moment I found out about her personal life as a parent, I was like, yeah, no.
I mean, that's also hotly debated, right? Like, all of her other children that she adopted were like, oh, that's not true. And I'm like, girl, it doesn't mean how much.
Yeah. But how much of that is like, it doesn't, like, if your other kids are defending it, you could have you can treat two kids very differently.
Oh,
yeah. Especially if half of them aren't around to witness.
Yeah, 100%. Not naming any names, but I completely understand that, because I know that there was two sisters. One of them was like, oh my gosh, like, oh, what do you need, honey? Whatever you want, child. Honey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other one was like, could you get her the thing that she wants?
Well,
oh, so the baby Jane and Blanche?
I was going to say, it's exactly what comes across in this movie, because we get this whole dynamic at the beginning with their mother, who just conveniently disappears after the first scene.
Yeah.
We never get any exposition of what happens to the dad or the mom. All we find out is that Blanche thinks we just have to die. Yeah. Well, and Blanche thinks she bought the house, and Jane thinks that she bought the house with her money through her dad being the
Speaking
adult.
Of, which is sad, because doesn't she at one point say, like, oh, I wish my daddy were here to see this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, she says this is like the house that daddy bought with the money, you know, that we earned together. Well, and like, I think about if this came out in 2022, audiences are so used to being spoon-fed information.
I thought you were going to say spooned for a second.
Oh, that too.
I was like, oh, hello.
Hello. But spoon-fed information in movies, I mean, it would be a shit show, truly. I don't mean to sound like a boomer, but it would be a shit show. Because
this movie isn't heavy-handed enough.
Right. Because Bob and I just talked about this on our Nope episode, Jamie, where people were arguing with me in my Twitter mentions, and I was like, I didn't ask for this, you know, about whether Jean Jacket was a good enough villain, a good enough character. And I was like, it's an animal alien. What do you want from it?
Who the fuck cares? It's like watching a creature movie, but from space. Yeah. That's it.
Right. And that's not the point of the movie, right? The point of the movie is, how do you deal with thinking that you crippled your sister? And I understand that that's probably not a 100% the term for it, but I mean
emotionally crippling someone too
is a very real thing. Absolutely,
it's a very real thing. Sorry,
because anytime it comes up, she's just like, la 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 la, not listening, don't want to hear about that, la la la,
over her ears, and says, I don't want to talk about it. I mean, how many times does Blanche remind Jane that she's in that chair? Mm-hmm. You know, like, how many times does Blanche kind of weaponize the accident and tries to guilt Jane just to manipulate her to get her?
Which is why I love that line. But Blanche, on that chair, because she turns around. First of all, she's standing at the window. You see her think about herself, like, do I say this? Do I, you know what? Screw it. And then she turns and says it. And it's if I wasn't in this chair, but Blanche. Yeah, in that chair. Because, like,
the point? You know, like, what's the point in her saying, well, if I wasn't the chair, you couldn't do these horrible things to me? Well,
and the thought process of, and the thought process that it's like, and you did that to yourself.
Yeah.
Oh. You did that.
And we as an audience are not going to discover that until the end. Like, I think that's another reason why the ending is so impactful, is that we as an audience learn about it at the same time as Jane. And that is another thing that is just not done well in a lot of films that have a quote-unquote twist in them now. To me, a lot of the twists are telegraphed. This took me – I was blindsided.
So your job is, if I ever get amnesia, is to show me this movie again.
Noted.
I might not remember who you are.
I will 51st dates you with this movie. You know how he plays the same song every time for her? I'm going to just wake you up with, but Blanche.
Who are you?
It's just me hanging over your bed with chocolates and a rat.
And a parakeet.
Yeah. Can we talk about that, by the way? Like, what drives someone to cook? The rat I kind of understood, right? Like, she was like,
oh, that was great.
She was like, did you know we had rats in the wall?
Oh, it's rats in the cellar.
Cellar, excuse me, the cellar. That's, you're correct.
Cellar. Because you know why? Because that was another one my mom used to say.
Yeah. Well, she, okay. So she uses the cellar as this escape. And I think when we truly understand how far gone how far gone Jane is when she thinks the doll is singing.
Yes.
What?
That doll is horrifying. Oh my God. Sorry.
Right?
I think dolls are creepy.
Annabelle who? Megan who? Like,
this doll is singing to me.
No, speaking of Megan, the scene where, like, Edwin's holding the doll in the kitchen and, like, her leg is up in the air. I was just like, what in the Megan is this?
I immediately was like, what a pervert. Because why are you as a grown man taking a doll that looks like a little girl and splitting her legs open? And I know he's queer-coded. Like, he's very clearly supposed to be gay.
And I think the actor was as well.
Famously, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's one of my favorite characters in the Feud series that is based on this.
Yes.
Because he's the only one that kind of goes to Betty and being like, don't you think you're taking this too far?
Yeah. I mean, I think we can get into that for the people that don't know sort of the quote-unquote feud around it. I mean, in real life, it was much less violent than the TV show makes it out to be. It was much less intense. But when this movie came out, famously, Bette Davis got nominated for an actor, but Joan Crawford did not. And so what Joan Crawford did was reach out to all the other people who were nominated and said, well, here's why you shouldn't show up to the ceremony. And you don't have to show up to the ceremony because I'll accept the award on your behalf. Which is just such a bitch move. So, you know, Bette Davis doesn't get her Oscar, but Joan Crawford gets to accept all these Oscars that are not hers. But for all intents and purposes, she gets photographed with an Oscar when Betty doesn't. And I just – that's a screenshot right there of their entire relationship. Like, it's this level of polite society assholeness that Joan has. And Betty was very working class. Like, that's –
yeah. Which everybody should probably watch that too, because that is phenomenal. Yeah.
It's one of the few Ryan Murphy things that I'll ever be like, you've got to watch this. I'm so sorry, Mr. Murphy, if you hear this. I will work with you. Like, it's not that. It's
let Jamie be your next Sarah Paulson.
Sarah Paulson. I did tweet that the other day, Jamie. Sorry for context. I tweeted, I'm looking for the Ryan Murphy to my Sarah Paulson. And I do think that Coven is a masterpiece, but I say all that to say, you know, he did a great job and all the actresses involved did a great job of portraying these women who became larger than life, who became so much more than their careers. And it just makes me a little sad that towards the end of both of their lives, I mean, Betty, you know, went on to do more music things, but Joan hung on to the slasher, and we will eventually cover the chainsaw movie sheets.
Yes, please. Yes. I would love to.
Because it's a fave. It's a very campy fave, but I don't know. I think that when we enter this story, you know, it's Jane that's experienced these years of psychological torture, and we're kind of watching this monster that Blanche has created spiral out of control. And so what we initially see upon the first watch is sort of...
But do you really think it's spiraling out of control?
Or was it more of a snap?
Well, I think it was both. She has to spiral from a level of alcoholism, right? Like, it's not a secret in the movie that she's an alcoholic.
Yeah.
But I agree. I think it's more of a... It's like tightly wound thing where eventually she just snaps under the pressure of... I think I've handicapped my sister and ruined her career.
Yeah, because I think the interesting part of it is that initially, I don't feel like she's that far gone. I feel like she's very much in control, but by the end of it.
God, yeah, by the end of it.
Gone.
Yeah, I mean, let's go ahead and talk about the ending because, you know, at the very end, we get the confession where Blanche finally admits that she's the one that tried to kill Jane and she's the one that caused the accident. She crippled herself. She's the one that turned Jane into the monster. You know, like she's the Dr. Frankenstein in this situation. And we just watch Jane deeply regress into childhood because she does what she was talking about at the beginning of the movie, which is twirling on the beach and singing for the bystanders.
Ice cream. She wanted ice cream. She didn't want to take a nap. You can't make
two
her.
Strawberry ice creams, please.
It just, it's so heartbreaking.
The way she says it, too.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, ordering the ice cream is just her final attempt at spoiling Blanche, you know? Like, that's what it boils down to. Gosh.
And that last twirl in the beach between the cops and the crew and all that stuff.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, it's heavy.
And I think the worst part, and the worst part about that is knowing that she's going to be demonized for all of it.
Oh, 100%.
And that she's going to have to live with that consequence that, you know, people were, because you already saw that people were standing on the beach, like, watching her, like, look, who is this crazy woman?
And did you both notice when she, I only noticed it on this watch, didn't notice it any earlier ones, but when she's ordering the ice cream, she is not wearing her hag makeup.
Yes. Yeah.
Yep.
I think it's just Betty at the age that Betty is.
She's just fully regressed.
Betty. Yeah. Just Betty.
I mean, God, what a heartbreaking ending.
Yeah.
I don't know. Bhavna, why don't you go ahead and give us your final thoughts? Because it's a heavy one.
No, it is a heavy one. And like knowing what we know about the production and knowing what we know about the movie as well. And like, you know, and these women and stuff, like I'm just still in awe that they got their shit together. Okay enough. I'm not even gonna say well enough. Okay enough to like do this. And it's like, I feel like it's a testament to like the era they grew up in and like the world that they grew up in, that it's not so much like that I can't work with her. It's more like the, all right, how am I gonna get this done? Even if I have to psychologically torture the other one and make her think I'm sleeping with the director. Oh wait. allegedly.
God, the story of my life.
Oh man, but like, you know, playing this little anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
What a classic.
No, you can't.
Yes I can.
No, you can't.
But just seeing those two like be professional enough to pull this off, like you can kind of tell in some of the cuts, like I can't name them off the top of my head, that you could probably tell that they were fucking around with each other so much that they had to make like compensating cuts in the movie. I'm talking like angles and stuff like that too. Like I'm like,
It's very well known that when Betty Davis kicks Joan while she's on the floor after she's fallen on that chair,
that she actually kicked her
a couple times.
I mean,
same girl. And then also when she was trying to get her out of the bed and get her down in the basement to tie her hands up, you know, she bitched about how much Joan Crawford weighed because she was a pretty small woman and Joan Crawford was very tall.
Yeah. The only other thing I can think of that I wanted to mention in my final thoughts was just like, It's from a technical standpoint, really great movie, but I want to know more about why they chose to have a lot of the audio off screen for a lot of things. Like I noticed it the most on the beach for sure. But then obviously the audio quality dipped as well. But I'm like, you have the actor right there. Why don't you just have them say the line? Like I noticed it glaringly when the cops were talking to the ice cream vendor dude, cabana dude. When they're reading the newspaper and they're like, oh, this baby Jane Hudson on the loose, blah, blah, blah. And like when the dude that works at the cabana is talking, like it sounds like he's far away. He's muffled.
Yeah.
Like it sounds like he's in a room versus on the beach. And then it cuts back and then it's him and it's his voice. But like technically, like if they could make the documentary on like the technical aspect of the movie, I'd love to know why. Just as a little bit of a nerd. But just, I would recommend this movie to anyone that likes horror. Even anyone that thinks this isn't horror. I would challenge them to be open to change their opinion. Because I feel like it hits all the hallmarks of horror. And it hits the hallmark of horror that, like, Jamie, you talk about all the time. Horror is the inevitable.
Yeah. I mean, you can't escape being irrevocably disabled. Like that's she's going to be in the chair for the rest of her life. And I think something else.
Or not. She could be on a beach somewhere.
Or not. She could also be laid out on the beach by her psycho sister.
And that she caused.
Psycho.
Yeah, that she caused. You know, that's the real rub of it, right? Like, this is a Greek tragedy wrapped up in Hollywood lore.
Yeah.
100% a Greek tragedy story. You know, I think of so many different mythologies and not being able to escape your fate and everything like that. But also something we really didn't touch on that I think none of us are quite as qualified to speak on as maybe one of our friends who are women of color. Being the only woman of color in this film and being murdered as a casualty because she can. Like, that's...
Yeah.
And then it just being like, oh, well. And then her actual, like, them searching for her is such a background thing.
Oh, it's
like,
100%.
Oh, the police calling her. And then, oh, it's a newspaper thing. Or, oh, like, it's that kind of thing. Like,
right. Like, it's not even the real reason that they get caught. The real reason they get, quote, unquote, caught is because Jane needs to be at the beach. They do catch her because of the description of her car. But, you know, Elvira is the heroine of this story, if there is going to be one. She goes after Jane and she's like, you're not going to kill Blanche. You're just not going to do it. No. And then when she discovers Blanche tied up in the basement, of course, Jane hits her in the back of the head with the hammer and it becomes a whole, woe is me, what am I going to do thing. Which, again, how many times has a white villain been glorified, given a redemption arc in pop culture, you know, redeemed when they've killed off, you know, non-white characters, but...
The only truly sympathetic character in the entire thing.
Correct.
Like, or truly innocent character, I should say. Not sympathetic. Innocent.
Yeah. Completely.
Both, yeah. I mean, it's just really interesting to me how that could be its own discussion. But yes, my closing thoughts are that this movie means a lot to me, and I think everyone should see it and think about what the cost of child stardom is. We didn't really touch too much on that, but that's also a
that's
nope.
That's true.
I think an unexpected double screening pairing would be this and Nope, and I think they go together perfectly. And if you do that, let us know. We'd love to hear your thoughts, but This is a 5 out of 5 movie for me. This is a 5, you know, crazy big hair bows out of 5. This is 5 ice cream scoops out of 5. 5 off track audio tracks out of 5.
5 just, letters thrown out the window.
Oh God. Yeah. What a suspenseful, a suspenseful moment in that film.
I'd like to mention that that took forever for her to type.
Right?
She's sitting there typing like 2 sentences.
Thanks to somebody like sitting in the same room as me who pointed that out, and it will never be the same for me ever again.
It will never be the same. I know.
Thank you.
what a time. But Jamie, as our esteemed guest. Oh, yes. Bob.
Before she does, I just thought of this. Out of context, Halloween ends. Spoilers. It's not. This won't spoil the movie, so don't worry, Jamie. But like,
it's on HBO Max.
Okay, so all I could think of was, oh, the Psycho and the Freak Show, but which one's which?
Oh my God! Yeah. Well, and I've seen Halloween Ends, so we can talk about that another time. But
I'm actually Psycho excited because I don't go to watch movies often. I don't like being in a movie theater, which is the funny part.
Fair.
I don't like it. So, like, I got HBO Max on a whim, and now I'm like, all these movies I can watch. Movies.
I know, I know. I'm the same way. Well, Jamie is our esteemed guest. Now you may share your final thoughts.
I mean, honestly, this movie, I wish I could watch it over for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Complete, like, do-over, you know. Because there's so many things that, one, I would love to see as, like, a clean slate, not knowing. But two, at this point and particular juncture in my life, and being old enough to kind of, not that I wasn't old enough then to understand, but, like, old enough in the sense that I can kind of now see certain things that I wouldn't have seen because certain things in my life hadn't happened yet or whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's one of those things. Just this movie is just, for me, it's definitely one of my favorite movies. It's pretty much my favorite when it comes to, like, actual, like, horror movies, because I have a favorite for basically every genre. But this, I just, lighting, set design, characters, just everything, start to finish. 10 out of 10, would recommend. Just
10, fantastic. Five letters to daddy out of five.
I've written a letter to daddy.
I'll never be able to listen to that.
Address is heaven above.
I'll never be able to listen to that the same way again, Jamie.
I'm sorry.
No, it's the best way possible.
I've haunted you with my beautiful tones, my lilting tones. Our cursed
karaoke song. Bhavna, well, first of all, Jamie, where can the people find you if they would like to commission some art? Because just to reiterate, Jamie, every 2 weeks does these incredible, incredible episode art covers for us that go on our Instagram and our Twitter and all of our social media. And she will absolutely make you some incredible art as well.
She will. And if you want an example of her art, the Crimson Peak painting was actually done by her. So if you want to scroll to our Insta.
Thanks, Gold. One of my favorites.
It's funny because I don't have much art on there anymore. I have to make a portfolio or something. But you can definitely find me at ink.witch on Instagram. That's me. And I would love to hear nasty comments about my beautiful voice singing.
DM I'll her, guys.
send me the DM, the direct messages. I'll take them all. Your voice sucks.
No, you better not say mean things to our Jamie. Well, in the meantime, you can find Bhavna is at the Lucky Charms. Where's the underscore? That's it.
Yeah. The underscore is for Instagram because Instagram is fancy like that.
Yeah, Instagram is fancy. I'm at Glitter Burrito. You can find us as at Bloody Broads Pod on all of our social media. Please like, subscribe, rate, review, tell a friend. And Bhavna, if they didn't like it, where can they put it?
In a letter to daddy, i.e. a 5-star review.
Instead of a stamp, I put kisses.
The postman said that'll do fine.
Until next time, y'all. Bye.
I love you.